Welcome to episode 173 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for January 25th, 2011. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, Sports Illustrated makes its case against Lance Armstrong. A study shows that kids learn computer skills before life skills like cycling. Want to ride your bike on the White Sands Missile Range? Here's your chance. And police in Dallas replace a 10-year-old's stolen bicycle. In racing news, Alberto Contador gets a one-year suspension for his positive clenbuterol test. Plus, the Tour Down Under, Carlos Swart killed in a tragic accident, and Floyd Landis retires, but does anyone really care? All that plus PodSafe cycling music, so sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and you may notice I sound a little bit strange today. I'm traveling, but as promised, I'm trying to give you consistent episodes of the show, and therefore I'm on my mobile microphone. So bear with me, I sound a little bit strange, but we'll get through the show together. And this show is sponsored by Jensen USA. Go to JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast to get some great deals. And this week, amazing deals on the WTB tire range. Well, prices from one-third to two-thirds off from everything from the Velociraptor to the Werewolf to the Mutano to the Descent and literally everything in between. Road tires, mountain bike tires, cross tires, 29ers, you name it, you can get it at Jensen USA. And this week, some great deals on those WTB or Wilderness Trail Bikes tires. I've been telling you for months, and you've been responding to the fact that Jensen USA has some of the best selection of products, the best prices, and overall the best customer service. Give them a try once. I guarantee you will be hooked like so many of your fellow Fredcast listeners. Again, go to www.thefredcast.com and click that Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page, or simply go to JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast anytime you're looking for products for your bike, all the way up to a complete bike itself. We thank Jensen USA so much for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, let's move to the news for this week, and there can be no doubt that the top story of the last 7 days has been Sports Illustrated's article entitled The Case Against Lance Armstrong. It was on the minds of cyclists everywhere and in the mouths of even the general public as the sports icon and cancer survivor was raked across the coals by Sports Illustrated in their investigation of Jeff Novitzky and the Food and Drug Administration's investigation into Lance Armstrong. Now, the Food and Drug Administration is investigating Lance, as we've talked about here on the show before, because at the time of some alleged abuses by Lance and by the entire team, they were employed by the U.S. Postal Service team. The U.S. Postal Service is an independent agency of the federal government of the United States, and as a result, the investigation. The article is long. It's interesting reading, but not a whole host of new allegations against Armstrong and his teammates. Perhaps the most damning, potentially, is the evidence that the article claims that was found at the home of Lance Armstrong's teammate, Yaroslav Popovich. Otherwise, we get into things like the Betsy and Frankie Andreu allegations about what Lance did or didn't say to his doctors as he was being treated for cancer. We talk about that Oakley rep and her testimony against Lance Armstrong. They also talk about Don Catlin, and you may recall a couple of years ago when Lance Armstrong announced his return to professional cycling that Don Catlin was sitting next to him on the dais there in Las Vegas at Interbike as Lance talked about how Catlin and his team of UCLA researchers would be working with the Astana team to prove to the world that they were riding clean. You also may recall that Catlin and the team parted ways several months later without a whole lot of evidence or test results coming out of the Catlin lab. At the end of the day, like I said, not a whole lot of new allegations, but I think the reason why it became such a topic last week was that everyone expected that SI was going to have new information against Lance, and also because when it's in a general interest publication like Sports Illustrated, it becomes more known by the general public. The general public may not have known some of these details and some of these allegations that were in the article. But it brings up a couple of points that are interesting, at least to consider. One we've talked about here before, and that is, how do you separate? And I talked about this on Twitter because somebody had blogged about this, and I thought that it was an interesting question, something we've talked about. How do you separate Lance Armstrong, the professional cyclist, from Lance Armstrong, the cancer champion and the champion for advocacy and for research and all those good works that come out of Livestrong? And if in some way it is proven that Lance Armstrong did what everyone is alleging, or at least this article and perhaps Jeff Nowitzki are alleging that Lance Armstrong may have done, can you separate that from the good works of Livestrong? And what effect will it have on the Livestrong organization? My personal opinion is this. At the moment, obviously, Lance is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. You're allowed to have your own opinion. I don't know. I haven't yet seen evidence that proves that Lance Armstrong did it. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's assume that he did. And let's assume that it is proven that he did use some kind of performance-enhancing product, including perhaps this HemaSist that's talked about in the Sports Illustrated article, which increases the oxygen-carrying capacity of your blood, similarly to EPO. If he did it, does that in any way, shape, or form diminish the good works of Livestrong and the Lance Armstrong Foundation? No. I think that it may potentially damage it, at least for the short term, but it does not in any way, shape, or form diminish the fact that Lance Armstrong is a cancer survivor and that he came through cancer in a dignified, honorable, and exemplary way, and that his example is being used by others as an inspiration. And you read stories all the time of people who have said that simply wearing that yellow band and thinking about how Lance came through cancer and then was able to win 7 Tours de France, that inspires them. And so I think that that inspiration would continue. I think that the Livestrong Foundation might take a temporary hit for a short period of time in the court of public opinion, but at the end of the day, Lance Armstrong is a cancer survivor and is a great advocate for those battling cancer. It also brings up another interesting point, something else that I saw online that I think bears discussing, and that's this. You look at a guy like Barry Bonds in professional baseball, and the way that Barry Bonds is treated versus the way that Lance Armstrong is treated. And you might think about the fact that, well, maybe Lance Armstrong is a little bit better at managing the media message that surrounds him. Think about how he was at the end of the Tour Down Under this year in Australia. He simply refused to discuss these new allegations, instead commenting on Twitter about how he believes that he will be vindicated and he's looking forward to that day. So I think he's just very good at handling the media message. Barry Bonds, on the other hand, the more that people talk about the possibility that Barry Bonds used performance-enhancing drugs, the more stories and evidence that come out, the more that people simply sort of assume that Barry Bonds used performance-enhancing drugs. Is there a possibility that as more and more people come out, whether people or evidence, whether it's the evidence that was found at Popovich's home, whether it is the Oakley rep, whether it is the Andreu's or Lance Armstrong's mechanic, former mechanic from the U.S. Postal Service team, who was quoted last week as saying, by the way, his name is Mike Anderson. He was interviewed in New Zealand last week in the Sunday Star Times when he was asked about the Lance Armstrong investigation. He said, quote, what he may become is a symbol for decades of corruption in professional cycling. Now, admittedly, Anderson and Armstrong have had their disputes in the past, and so you have to take these things with a grain of salt. But as more and more allegations swirl around Lance Armstrong, as more and more people come forward, at some point there will be, in the court of public opinion, by some, an assumption of guilt, even though perhaps no proof, no concrete proof has been given. Oh, and by the way, did I mention that Barry Bonds was investigated by the very same Jeff Nowitzki that is investigating Lance Armstrong? The parallels are definitely there. As Kalani Simpson of Fox Sports said in a recent editorial on their website, and I'll put a link in the show notes, if you remove the name Armstrong and put in the name Bonds, all of a sudden you begin to believe that he must have doped. But for some reason, perhaps it's because of his even greater celebrity, perhaps it's because of his cancer fighting, perhaps it's because of his advocacy, perhaps it's because, as Kalani says, it's because we call him Lance and not Bonds. Maybe that's the reason why we tend to believe Lance Armstrong, even though so many people believe that the professional peloton is rife with doping. Yet still, many want to believe that Lance Armstrong didn't do it. The guy who dominated the sport didn't do it, while the guy who dominated the sport of baseball, did. It's an interesting parallel. Barry Bonds, by the way, gets his day in court this coming March, when he goes on trial for perjury in the Balco investigation, spearheaded by Jeff Nowitzki. Still, I think that Lance Armstrong stands out as an example of an amazing athlete, as a cancer survivor, and as a goodwill ambassador for fighting the good fight and living strong. And I think that that's very important. And then finally, there's this. Lance Armstrong won 7 Tours de France, but those are years in the past. If it is proven that he did dope, what happens to his Tour de France victories? Does he get an asterisk? Does he lose those yellow jerseys? That is something that will have to be decided by the Amaury Sports Organization, who puts on the Tour de France, and of course by the UCI, the International Cycling Union. At the end of the day, I don't think it comes as any surprise that I'm not a huge Lance Armstrong apologist or the biggest Lance Armstrong fan. Having said that, I can't say with the evidence that I've seen that there is conclusive evidence that Lance Armstrong did or didn't use performance-enhancing drugs. We have seen plenty of reports that he's a unique physical specimen, that there are certain parts of his physiology that simply make him well-suited to the profession of cycling. Time will tell whether or not the Nowitzki investigation does turn up enough proof to make a case against Lance Armstrong. At the end of the day, however, the Sports Illustrated article entitled "The Case Against Lance Armstrong" didn't bring up that much new to convince this observer of Lance Armstrong's guilt. Judge for yourself. Link is in the show notes. Okay, moving away from potentially controversial subjects, let's look at something that actually is a bit more just indicative of our society in general. Don't know if you're familiar with the company called AVG, but AVG makes virus and other security software for your PC. And they did a little bit of research by polling 2,200 mothers with internet access and who also had kids aged 2 to 5 and who lived in the United States, Canada, the UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Japan, Australia, or New Zealand. Now, the moms were given a list of skills, technical skills, and life skills, and they were asked which ones their young children had mastered. Here's the interesting part for cyclists. Overall, 58% of kids aged 2 to 5 know how to play what they call the basic computer game. Now, for the UK and France, that goes up to 70%. And even 44% of 2 to 3-year-olds, remember the previous numbers were for 2 to 5-year-olds, but 2 to 3-year-olds, 44% of them have the ability to play a computer game. And by comparison, only 43% of kids aged 2 to 3 can ride a bike. Okay, let's look a little bit further. More kids aged 2 to 5 can play with a smartphone app, 19%, than tie his or her shoelaces, 9%. And as almost as many 2 to 3 year olds, 17%, can play with a smartphone app as 4 to 5 year olds. So in other words, they're learning much, much earlier. More children can open a web browser, 25%, than swim unaided, 20%. I don't know when you learned to swim, but I was, I think, 2.5 or 3. There's no gender divide between boys and girls. As many boys as girls, 58% to 59%, can play a computer game or make a mobile phone call, 28% for boys and 29% for girls. Now, mothers age 35 or older are slightly better at teaching their kids what the study calls life skills. For example, 40% of toddlers with moms aged 35 plus can write their own name, compared with 35% of toddlers with moms aged 34 or younger. Now, European children aged 2 to 5 lead their U.S. counterparts in knowing how to make a mobile phone call, 44% in Italy versus 25% for the United States, or playing a computer game, 70% in the U.K. versus 61% in the U.S., and operating a mouse, 78% in France versus 67% in the United States. Now, there's no doubt that our world has changed over the last 30, 40 years, or even just in the last 10 years alone. And our focus on technology has changed. Nevertheless, if you're in my age demographic, or even if you're in your late 20s, early 30s, you've got to agree that some of the best experiences you had, some of the best examples of learning how to deal with other people, resolution conflict, teamwork, and all of those other important life skills were learned playing stickball in the street or riding your bike around with your friends and doing a lot of those other outdoor activities that the study calls life skills. Yes, it's important to know how to use a mobile phone or a web browser or a mouse or just simply use a computer. I think about the people that I know who, when they have a problem with their computer, they go to their kids for help. Definitely that those things are important, but we can't diminish the value of some of these other skills, tying your shoes or going out for a bike ride or going for a swim. So hopefully parents will take this study to heart, get their kids outside and get them engaged in some of these other activities besides just using electronic gizmos. Hey, here's something cool. If you are located anywhere near the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico, the missile range is opening up what's normally a completely closed off area to mountain bikers for just one day next month. This is going to take place February 12th, and the ride's going to be about 24 miles in an area called Rhodes Canyon. Now, you have to register in advance by Friday for mailed applications or by February 6th for email applications. According to officials at the normally very confidential and sensitive White Sands Missile Range, the ride is going to offer mountain bikers a chance to see wildlife and several historic ranches along the route. You'll go over mostly rocky, mixed terrain with an elevation gain of 1,500 feet, and this ride is limited to 50 people. I got a link in the show notes to where you can apply, so apply early so that you can be one of the 50. And by the way, if you do this, please, please, please send me a video or some pictures, or at least give a call to the Fredcast listener hotline. I would love to hear about your experience riding at the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. How cool is that? Do you guys remember last week we talked about the story of astronaut Tim Kopra, who was in a bike accident, and he's preparing for what probably will be the last mission of the space shuttle Discovery. Had a bike accident, and as a result, question was whether or not he'd be able to participate in the mission and do the extravehicular activity, the EVA or spacewalk, that he had been training for during the 11-day flight. Well, last week, NASA removed Tim Kopra from the crew and added veteran Stephen Bowen, who flew last May on the most recent space shuttle flight. Now, this flight of the Space Shuttle Discovery has been on hold since November because of fuel tank cracks that they found. NASA said last week that they finally zeroed in on the cause for the cracking. The repair work is continuing, and they are hoping to launch February 24th. As you can imagine, Kopra is very disappointed And he is not going to be able to join this crew. However, if for some reason the February 24th launch is delayed until perhaps April, it is entirely possible that he may be able to rejoin the crew, but at the least he will be in mission control during the flight. Now, if this sounds familiar, you may have seen the movie Apollo 13 when Ken Mattingly was exposed to the German measles and as a result yanked from the crew, and therefore he was not able to go up on Apollo 13, but he was very instrumental in helping them figure out how to get those three astronauts back to Earth from lunar orbit safely. So hopefully Koper will still have the opportunity to assist his crew members, even though it will be from the ground. We wish him a speedy recovery. NASA has not said exactly what his injuries were, but as a fellow cyclist, I think we've all been there before, and our sympathies go out to him. Well, there were two things going on down in Australia over the last week that I was really interested in, and one that, well, I quite frankly didn't know about until I read the story. The two things, of course, were the Tour Down Under, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And the second was Jimmy Buffett playing at the Sydney Opera House. Now, I know a lot of you aren't going to be very interested in that, but at least for me and my family, that was kind of cool. I would have liked to have been there for that. But the other thing is the Australian Open, the tennis tournament going on down in Melbourne. Well, Bicycle Victoria has issued a warning to cyclists after receiving numerous reports of robberies at Melbourne Park in the past few days during the Australian Open. It seems that thieves are targeting people who are going to watch the Australian Open and leaving their bikes locked up outside. Bicycle Victoria spokesman Gary Brennan said one man whose bike was stolen had returned to a bike rack at Melbourne Park to find five locks had been cut through and were lying on the ground. Mr. Brennan said, quote, another cyclist said the police had told them they'd had 10 reports of thefts on one day. If it's 10 bikes, then it has almost got to be an organized gang. According to Brennan, the thieves are believed to be using heavy-duty bolt cutters to destroy locks and cables used to secure the bikes. According to Brennan and Bicycle Victoria, bikes should be locked in a visible, well-lit location with other bicycles. That's good advice. Or another option, they say, is for cyclists to lock up your bikes in the city and then ride the blue bikes from Melbourne's new bike hire scheme. And that would be a great way to get back and forth to the Australian Open tennis match. But if you are going to be going to the Australian Open and you're going to be going by bike, please be vigilant, be careful so that you can get home on your bike later in the day. And finally, in our general news section tonight, here is a press release that was sent out by Dallas, Texas, Police Sergeant Warren Mitchell. It deserves to be read in its entirety. The message is phenomenal. On January 18, 2011, police officers Raul Hernandez and Ferry Phelps answered a call regarding a theft. The complainant, a very upset 10-year-old Nukia Weaver, advised them that she had been out riding her bike with her friends when she stopped to go inside to get a drink of water. As she was coming back outside, Nukia saw an unknown male putting her bike into the trunk of a vehicle and leave the scene. After taking her report, documented on case number, and they list the case number here, officers Hernandez and Phelps went to Walmart to see if the suspect had attempted to return the bike that Nukia had just received on her birthday a little over a week ago. They also checked at the local pawn shops. When they were unsuccessful in locating her bike, officers Hernandez and Phelps, as well as police officers Diana Williams and Tonya McDaniel, decided to buy Nukia the same bike that had just been stolen. Nukia's sad tears turned into happy tears as she told her mom, "We called nice police officers to help us. We would like to recognize and publicly commend these officers not only for their dedication to the Dallas Police Department, but also to the citizens of Dallas for their willingness to right a wrong for this little girl." So, at least for me, kudos to Officers Hernandez, Phelps, Williams, and McDaniel for doing just a good deed and taking care of this little girl when somebody had done something very wrong and very awful to her. Kudos to them. Congratulations. It's great to hear a good news story like this one. Well, before we move on to the racing news tonight, it's time to talk about our sponsor, Epic Planet. You know, Epic Planet creates the Epic Rides DVDs, giving you the opportunity while you're on your trainer to transport yourself out of your basement or your bedroom and find yourself in some of the most scenic and challenging cycling roads around the United States, places like Vermont, Acadia National Park, Tucson, the Texas Hill Country. They're just a great DVDs, and they are absolutely gorgeous with the heads-up display showing you how long you've been riding, showing you what the terrain is like, and giving you the idea of the zone in which you should be training. Plus, if you download their power profiles, you can use your Epic Rides DVDs with your favorite computerized trainer. Check them out by going to thefredcast.com and clicking on the Epic Rides DVD on the right-hand side, and they've got a great bundle for you. It's their Texas bundle, giving you both Epic Austin and Epic Texas Hill Country for an incredible savings of almost $20 when purchased individually and $10 off the regular bundle price. Once again, check them out. It's www.thefredcast.com and click on that Epic Rides DVD. We thank Epic Planet for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Epic Planet. Well, topping the racing news this evening is news out of Spain that it looks like we're getting closer to a conclusion of the Alberto Contador doping case. As you'll recall, Alberto won the 2010 edition of the Tour de France, and it was later learned that he failed an in-competition drug test where the doping testers found traces of clenbuterol in his system. Contador has been claiming that the clenbuterol is as a result of eating tainted Spanish beef. And we've been going back and forth waiting to hear what the result would be. The Spanish Cycling Federation appears to now be recommending a 1-year suspension for Alberto Contador and stripping him of his 2010 Tour de France title. Now, you will recall that Floyd Landis was stripped of his 2006 Tour de France title, thereby awarding Oscar Pereiro the yellow jersey, the final yellow jersey of the 2006 Tour de France. If Alberto Contador is stripped of his title, that would then award the title to Andy Schleck, who has said he doesn't want to win the Tour de France this way. And as somebody pointed out on Twitter to me, I'm sure he doesn't want to be awarded the Tour de France either. Nevertheless, 1 year is the suspension that's being proposed by the Spanish Cycling Federation. Alberto Contador has 10 days to present further evidence before it is entered as his official suspension. He can then, of course, appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Now, a 1-year suspension is a bit unusual, and, well, it seems to me that it's the Spanish Cycling Federation taking at least what I consider the easy way out. Look, in most situations, when a rider is found guilty of doping, they get a 2-year ban. In this case, the Spanish Cycling Federation appears to be saying, look, we know we need to ban him, but we believe that it entered his system by way of the beef that he's saying that he ate. Problem is, as we pointed out in the Spokesman podcast multiple times, there have been plenty of other instances of other professional athletes who inadvertently ingested some material that was banned and thereby got the full ban. In this case, and as it seemed since the very beginning when we first heard about it, when many people were accusing the UCI of playing a little bit of favorites here with Alberto Contador, at least to this observer, it appears from the outside that the Spanish Cycling Federation is doing the very same thing. Now, for the UCI, on Thursday, they said that anything that Spanish authorities do shouldn't be taken as the final decision in the Alberto Contador case. In a UCI statement, they were quoted as saying, quote, to date, Alberto Contador has not received a sanction, and the UCI still awaits, in accordance with the provisions of its own regulations and those of the World Anti-Doping Code, to be informed of the decision of the Spanish Cycling Federation that should be provided as soon as possible. The document that was forwarded to the UCI, it continues, by the RFEC, that's the Spanish Cycling Federation, only represents one element of the disciplinary proceedings undertaken by the Spanish Federation, and upon which the rider may express an opinion before being subject to the ruling, and cannot be used for the purpose of a potential appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So what all of that is saying is there is no final decision here. He's been advised of a possible one-year ban. He has the opportunity, as I said earlier, to present more evidence before a final ruling is made, which can then be appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. But we're getting closer. We should have final conclusion very soon. Tragedy struck the professional cycling world last week when Carlos Swart, a South African professional cyclist from Team HTC Colombia, was killed after being hit by a truck while training in South Africa. Hendrik Lemmer, the director of Cycling South Africa, was quoted as saying, I think she would have been the greatest cyclist in our history if she had lived. Now, stories say that after dropping her bicycle computer, her cycling computer, she looked over her shoulder to check to see if the road was clear and made a U-turn, and that put her in the path of an oncoming truck. In case you're not familiar with Carla, she moved to the United States with her family when she was in her teens, and she went to Lees McRae College in North Carolina, where she was absolutely an up-and-coming professional athlete. She earned both running and cycling scholarships at Lees McRae College. She won 19 individual and team cycling titles with Lees McRae, becoming the first cyclist to win all four U.S. collegiate titles, road, track, mountain, and cyclocross in one season in 2008. According to Lees McRae athletic director Craig McPhail, quote, Carla represented everything you want in a student athlete. She was caring, compassionate, and competitive. Her impact on so many will last a long time. While recruiting her 6.5 years ago, I could tell she was truly special, and I am very proud to have had her represent the green and gold of Lees McRae College. Our thoughts, our prayers, and our good wishes go to Carla's friends, family, and teammates. Lees McRae is going to start the Carla Swart Memorial Scholarship in her honor, and I will put a link to the college in the show notes. Meanwhile, Carla's team, HTC High Road, has created what they call the Carla's Circle Fund. The Carla's Circle is a fund that they created to help Carla's family and to help them continue Carla's interest. Direct donations can be made on their website, and yes, there is a link in the show notes, with 100% of the proceeds going to the Swart family. Final bit of news about professional bike racers. 35-year-old American Floyd Landis announced last week that he is going to retire from professional cycling. He told ESPN, quote, I don't want to come across that I'm quitting because I'm bitter. I've spent 5 years trying to get to a place that I can never go back to, and that's causing more stress than it's worth. There must be more to life than this. I've been riding my bike a lot, trying to figure out life, which is the same reason I did it to start with, so I've come full circle. I'll always ride my bike, but I'll never start on a line on a road and try to get to another line on a road faster than another guy. Also last week, Floyd Landis was quoted by Cycling News trying to make an analogy between gun laws in the U.S. and doping in cycling, saying, quote, in the U.S. we have these gun laws where half the country thinks we should have them and half don't. But the fact of the matter is that the bad guys have guns, and you can't get them back from the bad guys. It's nice to live in a pretend world where you can start over, where you can say you're not going to have guns. Well, that's wonderful, and good luck with that, and go to church on Sundays and enjoy yourself. But the fact of the matter is that there are guns, and the bad guys have them, and trying to keep others from having them isn't going to accomplish anything. He then went on to say, quote, you got to go about it another way, and you've got to legalize doping. They, meaning the testers, are so far behind in the testing organizations that there's no way to change it now. Just accept that it's there, that it's not going away, and that it's just going to get more complicated. And the fact that it's not that complicated yet compared to what it will be, 10 years from now, it's going to be four times as hard as it is now to test for these things. He said, they're not even remotely close to catching anybody. It's just a joke. You can use as much EPO as you want, and unless you're an idiot, you're not going to get caught. Wait a minute. Now, let me think about this for a second, Floyd. Who was it that got caught? Oh, right. Did you really just... No, never mind. Floyd Landis, retiring from cycling at the age of 35. Well, the 2010 edition of the Santos Tour Down Under is now in the history books, and you'll recall on last week's show I mentioned that this was shaping up to be a battle mano a mano between Andre Greipel and Mark Cavendish. Yeah. This year's Tour Down Under was won by Cameron Meyer from Team Garmin Cervelo in 17 hours, 54 minutes, and 27 seconds. Second place going to Matthew Goss of Team HTC High Road. Third place going to Ben Swift from Team Sky. Fourth to Michael Matthews from Rabobank. And fifth going to Lorenz Ten Dam, also from Rabobank. Now, don't take my sarcasm at the beginning of the show as saying that Andre Greipel didn't have a great race, because he did, coming in seventh. The Omega Pharma Lotto rider coming in 26 seconds back in the final overall standings from the overall winner, Cameron Meyer. As for Mark Cavendish, well, unfortunately, he did not have the best of Tours Down Under, coming in 129th and last place as the Lantern Rouge in the Tour Down Under, 33 minutes, 51 seconds back of the race winner. And what about our friend Lance Armstrong completing his final international cycling event? Lance Armstrong finishing 6 minutes 42 seconds back of the race winner in 67th place. At the end of the event, Cameron Meyer, the race winner, the winner of the in the closest margin of any Santos Tour Down Under, said, quote, "I'm absolutely shocked, but so excited at the same time. It was such a close bike race. All I could do was cross my fingers, but a big thanks go out to the team. Without them, I wouldn't have won this." A few moments ago, mentioning that Mark Cavendish did not have the best of Tours Down Under this year. And let's be honest, Mark Cavendish usually does peak later in the season. I mean, look how he performed in the 2010 Tour de France. However, Cavendish did have one particularly bad and memorable day, and this was on Stage 3. Stage 3 included, at the very end, finishing circuits. There were three of them, and it was relatively hilly. It was a 21-kilometer circuit. And Cavendish, who's not known for his hill-climbing prowess, was falling behind the leaders. And what normally happens in a case like that is the race officials keep the roads closed until the final cyclists go by. But for some reason, the sag wagon that day passed Cavendish and the others that were in his group, and Cavendish ended up riding his bike on roads that were open to regular traffic. He said, quote, "I did the whole last lap on open road. You had to stand on both sides of the thing and stop for traffic." He was asked whether or not he had to negotiate, navigate through a lot of traffic. He said, quote, "quite a bit, more than you want in a professional race." Now, race director Mike Turturro said in a meeting that they would find out why it was that the policy that they have of keeping that sag wagon and the police closures behind the cyclists, why that policy wasn't followed. He said, quote, "we've had a policy in place whereby the green light vehicle, that's the sag wagon, is the last vehicle on the road behind the last rider for 13 years. For whatever reason, our understanding is that the green light vehicle was called forward of the Cavendish group with about 10 kilometers to go, and we don't know the reason why. Until we know how and why, I can't make any further comment, but it's not the policy we've had in place for 13 years. It's never happened before." He then went on to say, "it's not good, but sometimes these things happen. We'll be meeting as soon as possible with police." Now, as I mentioned, the winner of the race was from Team Garmin Cervelo. And what was interesting was that Cameron Meyer won the race just after Garmin Cervelo fired their coach, Matt White. In a statement on Sunday, Garmin Cervelo said that White broke team rules when he referred another rider, Trent Lowe, to a doctor in April 2009 without the approval of the team's own medical staff. If you've been following Garmin Cervelo for any amount of time, you know that they have a very strict policy about doping. And by the way, doping was not alleged here, but about doping and all medical related issues regarding their riders. So if you're going to make a referral, it's got to go through official channels. The team said, quote, it has an explicit internal policy that all medical referrals are approved by our medical staff. In this instance, this vital rule was broken. And as a result, the quote's over, by the way, as a result, Matt White was sacked just before Cameron Meyer won the 2010 Tour Down Under. Now, I understand that Australian cycling officials are going to be investigating whether or not this was a reasonable and legal firing, but by all indications, White did break a team rule, and therefore, unfortunately, he got the boot. Well, with the conclusion of the Santos Tour Down Under, which is an official UCI event, it should come as no surprise who the leaders are atop the UCI World Tour rankings. Of course, it's the top five: Cameron Meyer, Matthew Goss, Ben Swift, Michael Matthews, and Lawrence Ten Dam. As far as countries, Australia, Britain, Netherlands, Spain, and Germany are in the top five. And in the top five teams, it's Rabobank, followed by Garmin Cervelo, HTC Highroad, Sky, and Movistar. The next UCI World Tour event is Paris-Nice, and that takes place March 6th through the 13th. Last week, the Tour of Utah made a couple of interesting announcements. First and foremost, the Tour of Utah announced that it is now going to be a UCI-sanctioned event. Going along with that, the purse for the race goes up from $40,000 to $150,000. And finally, the news that Medalist Sports will now be managing the Tour of Utah. Not familiar with Medalist Sports? Medalist Sports is the company that puts on the Amgen Tour of California, the company that is going to put on the Quiznos Pro Challenge, and the company that has traditionally put on the Tour de Georgia and the Tour of Missouri. Now, from my perspective, this is great news. As I said in a blog post on the Fredcast.com, my opinion was that the Tour of Utah was in a bit of a fragile position. Consider the fact that races all across the United States have had financial problems. By the way, the Tour of Utah included. You may recall that a few years ago, the Tour of Utah had to cancel the race because they didn't have enough sponsorship or funding. Look what's happened to the Tour de Georgia. Look what's happened to the Tour of Missouri. And now, with the Quiznos Pro Challenge taking place in August, Quiznos is August 22nd through the 28th, and the Tour of Utah is August 9th through the 14th. And with the Quiznos Pro Challenge getting that international recognition and attention because of the Lance Armstrong connection, I felt that the Tour of Utah was in a bit of a fragile position. But I think that what I called on my website, this triple whammy of news, gives the Tour of Utah the shot in the arm that it needed to hopefully keep it from being in the pro cycling race graveyard. It now joins the Tour of California and the Quiznos Pro Challenge as the three races in North America that everyone is going to be paying attention to. It's now up to you, the fans, the teams, the riders, Medalist Sports, and the Miller family, because the Millers are the ones who sponsor the Tour of Utah. It's the Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah. And it's also up to the state of Utah to ensure that the Tour of Utah lives up to the expectations so that its future viability and popularity can be maintained. Once again, the Tour of Utah takes place August 9th through the 14th. It's in my backyard, so you know that I will be covering it. Great news for American cycling. Speaking of the Quiznos Pro Challenge, they are now looking for volunteers. They recently announced volunteer opportunities for the event scheduled for August 22nd through the 28th. Those who would like to volunteer for this event can apply online at QuiznosProChallenge.com. They have the following positions available: security, media check-in. They're looking for people in start and finish cities. They're looking for economic impact survey volunteers, volunteer check-in, individual stage course marshals, and more. According to Ellen Kramer, the general manager of the Quiznos Pro Challenge, quote, "The support of the local communities and assistance from dedicated volunteers will be crucial to the success of the inaugural Quiznos Pro Challenge. We welcome the country's biggest sports and cycling fans to Colorado to take an active role in this historic event." I do have links in the show notes to where you can go on the Quiznos Pro Challenge website and volunteer. And I got to tell you, from having participated in, or at least been to, the tour of California and the tour of Utah over the last few years, I know that people come from around the country, indeed from around the world, just to volunteer at these events. So even if you're not in Colorado, considering making this part of your vacation plans and volunteering for the Quiznos Pro Challenge. And finally, rounding out our race and racer news for this episode of the Fredcast is the news from France about the teams that the ASO, the organizers of the Tour de France, have invited to the 2011 edition of the famous three-week race in July. Now, they have to invite the 18 Pro Tour teams, plus they're allowed to invite four wildcard teams. And it should come as no surprise that those four teams are French teams, although I'll tell you in a minute why it was a bit of a surprise to some. Those four teams are Cofidis, Française de Jeux, SAR, Soja Sun, and Team Europcar. And they will join Omega Pharma-Lotto, Quickstep, Saxo Bank, Euskaltel Euskadi, Movistar, AG2R, Sky, Lamprey, Liquigas, Astana, Leopard Trek, Rabobank, Vacan Soleil, Katusha, BMC, HTC High Road, Garmin Cervelo, and Radio Shack. Well, here's where the surprise comes in. Let's assume that Alberto Contador does indeed draw this one-year suspension. Well, as the defending champion, the former defending champion in that case, or the non-defending champion, Alberto Contador would not be there. We would have Andy Schleck, who would have been awarded the victory. But Andy Schleck, of course, did not technically ride into Paris wearing a yellow jersey. But there is one man currently left in the pro peloton who did ride into Paris wearing a yellow jersey and whose victory has not been contested. And that is Carlos Sastre. Carlos Sastre is currently riding for Team Geox TMC. Did you hear me mention their name? You didn't. And that's because Carlos Sastre and Team Geox were snubbed from this year's Tour de France. And on his website, he is quoted as saying, quote, "I honestly can't say a lot about it. It's the Tour's and the ASO's decision, and I respect it. My wish and my team's wish was to be able to compete in the Tour, myself as the winner of the 2008 Tour, Menchov, who came in third in last year's competition, Rafa Valls, who was the newcomer in last year's race. Today we found out that that wouldn't be the case, and I really do think that it's a shame, because after 10 years competing in the French Tour, not being able to do it in 2011 is really bad news. But that is what there is, and we can't do anything about it." And that will round out the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, and in fact, round out the podcast for this week. Before we go, however, I do want to thank this week's show sponsors. Of course, Jensen USA. Jensen USA, the place where you get a better selection of products, better prices, and superior customer support. Go to www.jensenusa.com/thefredcast anytime you're looking for something new for your bike. We'd also like to thank Epic Planet. Go to thefredcast.com and click the Epic Planet link for a great deal on the Texas 2-pack. Of course, anytime you're looking to buy something from Amazon.com, please click that Amazon.com link at thefredcast.com. You'll get the same price as you always would, but the Fredcast gets a little bit of support to help keep the show going. And finally, thank you so much for your donations to the Fredcast. They are, as always, very much appreciated. To stay in touch with the Fredcast, don't forget you can follow along with everything that's going on with me and with the show on Twitter. Our Twitter name is Fredcast. Just go to twitter.com/Fredcast. Of course, the email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Go to our website at www.thefredcast.com, and you can also click our new Facebook page link. Please like our page. We would very much appreciate that, and send us some audio comments. We've got some great features coming up. Love to hear from you what you'd like to hear about here on the Fredcast. Just give us a call at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Now it's time for a feature of the show that we've been doing since, well, way back at show number one. It is time for PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling. And it's available at www.cadencerevolution.com. And I was reminded of Cadence Revolution recently. I was on my CompuTrainer, which we're going to talk about on next week's show. And I was watching an Epic Rides DVD. No, this is not a commercial. And I remembered that Cadence Revolution had made some specific mixes for some of the Epic Rides DVDs. I popped one of those on, and it definitely kept me motivated throughout the ride. So go ahead and check it out at www.cadencerevolution.com. Tonight's PodSafe music is by Annie Fitzgerald, and it's called Watch the World Go By. I hope that you enjoy it as much as I did. And once again, thanks to Cadence Revolution and Keith for putting this together for us every week. Well, that's it for this episode of the Fredcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Thank you for dealing with this funky microphone as I travel all over the country for the day job. Thanks for telling your friends about the Fredcast. We'll be back in just a couple of days with another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. But between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride. By the
let's watch the world.